You're listening to a podcast from 702.
As I said, Mbali, and my apologies for, you know, just talking about respect and platitudes and names and such and titles. And yeah, I go and mess up your name the first time I utter it. Good afternoon, Chen. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, Gashon Brooks. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm good, thank you. The emphasis on my name and my surname, it hurt me. It cut me deep.
It's all right. How are you doing?
No, I'm awesome. I'm really good. Thank you so much for asking. And look, Mbali, this is obviously the time of the year, and I think it's exacerbated by the fact that we just come from a year where we spent a lot of time less than active, right? All the way through from restrictions at some point where you weren't allowed outside of your yard at all. You weren't allowed to go running. You weren't allowed to go walking through to you can walk, but you must wear a mask through to, you know, all kinds of other restrictions. And people lost their gym memberships, and others, you know, didn't have the income to sustain their gym memberships. So in other words, it was a year not necessarily of being a glutton, but it wasn't a very active year. And then now we're coming straight out of the festive season, which we know is a period of gluttony. Surely we do need to pay attention to our diets and what we're putting into our mouths and eventually into our bodies going into 2021.
Yes, we do. As you were saying, it was a very sedentary year and we were not active, but also we saw an increase in, because we were working from home much more, you know, the free trips were much more frequent, or the pantry trips, and that made people have more unhealthy eating habits. So, but also we're coming now from the festive season and high intake of maybe alcoholic beverages or desserts or whatever the case was. So our eating habits have definitely shifted, but we know that it is 80% of what we eat in terms of our health, and then we need to pay attention to it. So that's why we are here now, to say, what can we do moving forward?
And it's something very important, because unfortunately this is, I guess, you know, it's a party period. It's not just that big Christmas lunch that we go on about, right? You know, the turkey and the gammon and the what, and, you know, all kinds of other stuff that we basically, you know, enjoying during this period. But it also then boils down to all the other you know, things that we get up to. It's the holidays. You don't feel like cooking, so you'll grab a pizza, you'll order in some fried chicken and, you know, more fish and chips than usual, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess one of the first things then is, a lot of people detox at this time of the year. This is where everyone talks about. I've never detoxed in my life, by the way, just to let you remember.
Yeah.
So what is detoxing? Does it even help? How does it work?
Yeah, so the human body is very sophisticated and it goes through the process of detoxification. So that is basically when we are getting rid of the toxins in the body, and in different forms, because there are different forms of toxins. One, or like five of the major organs that are responsible for the detox process is your liver, which removes toxins like alcohol, drugs, and chemicals. And then your kidneys. Kidneys work like a, they work like a filter. And then your gut, we know of the waste material, which is what we call poop. That is also part of the toxins getting out of our body. And then lungs, in a form of carbon dioxide, and skin and our immune system also, they are involved in the detoxification process. Unfortunately, over the years, the whole detox cleanse has been made very popular. And then people think, now that I've eaten, you know, I've had unhealthy eating habits, now I need to detox, drink some tea or some cleanse or some form of something that is labeled detoxing or cleaning. And we then think that's a way of doing it. But actually, we don't need to drink anything, because so long as we've got all those organs intact, those organs that I've just mentioned, they run the show. And there's no tea, there's no anything that you can drink that will make the detoxification process happen in science sense. But what happens is, you drink those teas, they give a laxative effect, you feel lighter because you've been running up and down the loo, and then we think, I'm now detoxified. But actually, every day, even during the festive season, our bodies were doing the detoxification process.
Yeah, and there's a high probability that you might dehydrate yourself while detoxing in the process.
Exactly, which we see. Actually, it is a true thing. You know, we see a lot of, because I work in hospital as well, and we see a lot of people being admitted for dehydration, and then they have to be given like an IV drip to restore their fluid and electrolytes, because they've been taking such harsh laxatives trying to detox. And depending on how, you know, good condition their kidneys are, if they're not in a good condition, then it throws everything out and then they literally go through dehydration, which for younger children or younger individuals, it can be even fatal.
Hey, you know.
Yeah.
And thank you for sort of clarifying that, because that's, you know, one of the first things that you hear of this idea of detoxing. And that's exactly why I've never detoxed, because I have a functional liver. I have functional kidneys. I have functional other bits of my body that is able to do the job there.
100%.
What is an eating plan, though? And you know, it's one of those very interesting sort of notions or ideas, considering that in our house, the conversation generally is, what do we cook tonight? You know what I mean? There's no plan. There's no schedule. There's no little planner on the wall that says, okay, today it's pasta and this, and tomorrow it's that and that. But what is an eating plan ultimately?
So an eating plan, the misconception is that one needs to be on an eating plan when they are trying to lose weight, for example.
Mm.
But that's not true, because everything or everybody eats and drinks every day.
Mm.
And that then makes everyone be on an eating plan. It might not have been something that was created by a dietitian, but whatever that you are eating and drinking every day, that's your eating plan. Then we can look into, what are sort of your health goals? What do you want to achieve? Are you suffering from constipation? Do you just want to, you know, make sure you don't have nutritional deficiencies? What are you aiming for? And then we say, okay, we will then help you design or like have an eating plan, or eat in such a way that you meet your health goals or whatever nutritional goals that you might have.
Mm.
So when we look into that, then eating plan then becomes sort of individualized, but then families, you know, because you can be eating something else and your partner is eating something else and your children are eating something else in the household, it becomes too chaotic.
I think then that plan only lasts a week. That plan normally only lasts a week,
Then we say, on that plan, this family, what are they looking for? Are there any allergies in the family? If not, then they are just looking for eating healthy and making sure they don't have the nutritional deficiencies. Then a normal way of eating, of making sure we've got our whole grains, plenty of vegetables and fruits and good lean protein and, you know, variety of dairy if we're eating dairy. If not, we do plant alternatives and legumes and water and all that, then becomes sufficient as an eating plan for the household. And without going, I am a dietitian, full on, been practicing for many years now, and I can tell you, I despise plans that are stuck in the fridge, because people don't follow them. If they do follow them, their life becomes so strict that they don't want to eat anything else but what the dietitian has said they must eat on that is stuck up in their fridge.
Mm-hmm.
So I often say, unless there are specific diseases, these conditions and allergies and all that, then we have as a family to sit down and say, what do we love eating? If it is eating muroho and chicken liver is what we want to eat, let's put that on our eating plan. Let us not be told by, you know, the society what we should be eating, especially if there are no diseases or of that kind that are involved. If there are, then a dietitian will be involved, and then we look into your eating plan for that disease condition.
I'll come back to that, because I mean it sort of rung a bell that I sort of remember from the early, let's call it the mid 80s to the early 90s, sort of something that was stock standard in terms of our understanding when it comes to a healthy diet. But we'll get back to that in just a few, because the other thing that was also come up in, I don't know, and you'll tell me if I'm wrong, especially in my use of language, you know, I find that dieting, diet plans, eating plans, staying fit, staying healthy, has become very trendy. You know, there's these trends that happen every now and again. And then, you know, the one moment carbs are good, the next moment carbs are bad. And then one of the big things that stands out now is this notion of eating according to your blood type. Is there anything, you know, is there such a thing?
Yeah, so blood type diets were developed for the purpose of personalizing diets. So then the doctor that developed the blood type diets was like, okay, I think the best way to group people according to their blood types, and somehow say, because of what we see, that maybe blood type A is susceptible to these type of diseases, then they must reduce the intake of X, Y, and Z.
Mm.
But the problem with blood type diets, and this is documented in science, is that it's limiting because it doesn't then take consideration into your food likes and dislikes. As myself, Mbali, there are things that I don't like to eat personally, and it's not that they make me sick, I just dislike them. But blood type diet does not take into consideration those type of things. But also economic factors, you know, what can you afford and what can't you afford?
Mm.
So activity level, are you an active person? If you run Comrades and you are blood type A, and let's say, I'm not going to get into the details of blood types, but let's say, for example, blood type A says, cut all carbohydrate sources completely, and you are a Comrade runner because that's what you want to do. How are you going to go up the hill and run that without having good carbohydrate sources? Then you're going to say, no, I'm just going to cheat for the purpose of running the Comrades. And that's, I have a problem with that because we shouldn't be cheating on food. We should be eating, enjoying food as it is part of life. So then that's the thing about blood type diets. Even when you take a book, there's a book that is out there in the bookshops that was written by this doctor that came up with the blood type diet. The first page, when you read in fine print, he says that you must listen to your dietitian and your physician because this plan is not specific to your needs and that is to show that he's also saying, you know, it is just a blueprint or some way taking us to personalizing our diets, but it's not it. There's more that a dietitian considers.
It's not the plan that's going to make all the difference in your life. It is.
No.
I mean, yeah, I find that notion very interesting as well. But at the same time, you know, we're talking about this, and I like the fact that you're saying that there should be a recognition and an understanding of what it is that I prefer to eat, what I like eating. So, for example, I am a meat eater. What does that mean? You know, I guess telling me that I should be a vegetarian from this day forward without, you know, any immediate compelling medical reason would pretty much be pointless, isn't it? So, right. And
that's
then people always think that you need to have sort of this, you know, what people talk about disparagingly as rabbit food. You know, people always think that an eating plan at this time of the year consists of rabbit food, lettuce and anything green. That's what goes, and it's dull. Is that the case necessarily?
No, the diet does not have to be all green and dull. You know, most people dislike dietitians because of the misconception that we put people on the green and dull and boring and healthy and what's not. And it is us as a people who've now said, you know, broccoli is for nutrition, but then a cupcake is for reward. I need to eat a cupcake because I've been good. I've been eating my vegetables. That is us. We made that notion. And I say, when you look into science and you really study it, you start to realize that broccoli and a cupcake can coexist in the same diet and a person still remains healthy. So long as they understand how to balance the two, because it can't be all or nothing. You know, as much as you can every day, all day eat broccoli, broccoli is a fantastic vegetable, but then you'll be then complaining and saying, oh, it's boring and dull, as much as you can all day, every day eat a cupcake. So finding that balance, I often call it, it's not about, you know, affection, but it's finding that balance and have all the things that are nourishing, have all the things that are celebratory, as the French people say. They say when they look at food, it's about celebration. So if we all think of it like that and somehow find a balance to our African way, then we've got something good going. We've got food that is going to nourish us, but we've also got food that we love to eat because of nostalgia or just, you know, because it makes us feel good.
That's it. You're my dietitian going forward. Klar. End of story.
Thank you.
Interview done.
You're welcome, guys. It comes through.
No, because and I really appreciate this conversation because I think that that's the issue. It can become very daunting for people when we have this conversation. I won't disclose what my response was when we were going to talk about an eating plan for the beginning of the year before the show. I mean, I know, I recognize it's an important conversation, but I was really sitting here and waiting for, you know, ultimately everything that, you know, all the stuff that I've heard on a regular basis. And I think the one thing that you making sure of is to keep this conversation real based on people's budgets and experiences and wants, but more specifically, what is actually healthy for people as opposed to sort of a fad thing. And I think that it's easy, and I'm not necessarily, I don't know if it's all, you know, specific people that fall in this category, but people that tend to give you advice on what to eat and how to exercise, how to remain healthy. sometimes it becomes very trendy, you know, and worryingly so. The juicing thing, another trend. I guess it makes life easier when you're able to take your spinach, banana, beetroot, you know, stuff that you have to sit down and chew and take time consuming. I guess it's easy when you just chuck them into a big thing, blend, juice, drink it on the way. Is that healthy? Is that a good idea? Does it help at all? Does it make a difference?
Yeah. When juicing, especially because there are different types of juicing, say, for example, smoothies, where the fiber of vegetables and fruits is still intact, that is fine. I mean, you add stuff to it. We say you must have, you know, some vegetables, some fruits, some form of dairy or milk alternatives and good fats, be it peanut butter or avocado. That's a nice smoothie. That's a quick way of, you know, getting your meal on the go. But the other juicing whereby people are drinking juices where the fiber of vegetables and fruits is now lost, that becomes an issue because now you are what we call breaking down the food matrix of a fruit or a vegetable, making it much higher or concentrated in natural sugars, which were fine when the fiber is still intact, but now you've just made it just be the natural sugar without any fiber. Yes, you won't feel full. You'll feel light because, of course, you're not eating solids. You'll go to the bathroom and have a little bit of, you know, laxative effect. It comes with drinking high sugar concentrated drinks, but it doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't solve the problem of behavior modification. You'll still, when you're done with that juicing, sit down and eat a whole big packet of crisps. And because you haven't been helped in going through the behavior, you know, and then what then? You know, it takes you back to zero. And we want a healthy South Africa whereby we are reducing the chronic diseases. We've seen it now with COVID-19 that the fact that we've got such high stats of diabetes, hypertension is really failing us. We're seeing a lot of people that have those chronic diseases dying of the COVID-19 disease. So we want to, moving forward, South Africans who understand healthy eating, not for hype, not trendy, not something that is hashtagged, but they understand the essence of it such that they can sustain it for life. And it's not just something you do to lose weight now, and then in March you gain all that weight back. So that's my point, that if we understand, then we will know that juicing is okay, but it can't be the fact that I'm just going to juice for 30 days. And then what happens after 30 days?
I hear you. I mean, there's just two more things. One, just a quick dip in, and then, you know, so the last one, sort of a parting shot from your side. But I mean, I guess the one thing that always stands out for me about sort of these diet plans and eating plans and, you know, a lot of the stuff that you see commercially being put forward and or shared via social media, I guess some of it can't be all that healthy anyway, no matter how well intended it all is, because it's a shock to the system. And I was just thinking now, if I go from my steak and chips diet suddenly to juicing, it might not be all that well for, you know, it might not work out all that well for me because it's a bit of a shock to the system.
100%. So all the things that are created, everybody must take them with a pinch of salt because the messaging will catch your eye. It's supposed to catch your eye. But, you know, does the science really, you know, say what they're saying? We don't know. Like, for example, quick one. There was an advert where they were saying 24-hour weight loss. They were promising people weight loss in 24 hours. And we know that body fat can only start being lost from 10 to 14 days. But they were saying overnight, you lose weight. So those sort of things are not ideal because, and there are a lot of them, and it's because our, you know, regulatory system in South Africa is behind. There's a lot of work that we're trying to do. So, yeah, those are the problems that we are facing. So be vigilant. I'll just say consumers need to be very vigilant with the things that they are buying to take or drink.
And I guess in the 10 seconds that we have left, I mentioned earlier on that, you know, I grew up in the early 80s, mid-80s, early 90s, and the general messaging then was a healthy diet, maintain a healthy diet, a well-balanced, healthy diet. I guess that still holds true and makes sense today.
Yeah, it sounds boring. Right quantity, right quality, just everything in moderation. That's it. It might sound as boring as ever, but that remains the best science to date.
Mbali, you're the best. All the best. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was Mbali Mapoli, from a dietitian for Mbali Mapoli Inc.